Unpopular opinion, but
Unpopular opinion.
You're listening to Unpopular Opinion, a podcast for professionals from all walks of life who want to hear success stories from innovators who've won by taking the path less traveled. In each episode, recovering journalist and content marketer Ashley Amber Saba interviews individuals who have prospered thanks to their genuinely unpopular opinions, despite warnings from naysayers, threats to their careers, and colossal obstacles. All rebels are welcome.
Welcome to Unpopular Opinion. I'm your host, Ashley Amber Saba, and this episode is brought to you by my friends at Audience Ops. Audience Ops is a content marketing agency, and they produce every episode of my show. If you're looking to launch a podcast for your brand or business, please let me know and I will hook you up. Today, I'm joined by Perry Hedrick, founder at Crackle PR. Perry, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And I cannot wait to get into our topic of the day. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, there was a post that came out from Perry that got a huge amount of interaction, and I couldn't ignore it either. And his take was that marketing should maybe consider actually reporting to PR or communications. And I want to talk to him today about what led him believe that this structure should be considered other than the other way around.
Yeah, so the first headline or the first line of that post was blazing hot take, because I knew that it would ruffle some feathers. And you know, I have a lot of followers on LinkedIn, and most of them are marketers or PR people. So it was, you know, the audience for the post was perfect in the sense that you were going to have a natural tension inherent in the audience. But my take was that for years and years, you know, our PR agency has always reported to the CMO or the VP of marketing at the tech companies we work with. And that's fine. I'm not fundamentally sort of opposed to that. But I do think that the relationship maybe gives PR short shrift against the backdrop of things that I'll talk about now. So like, as an example, I think the average tenure of a CMO is something like 18 months right now. VP of marketing, probably not that far behind. And so on the one hand, on its face, it seems a little bit odd to have somebody in charge of the entire communications program that may not be around in 4 months, 5 months. So that's one thing. And I think the second thing, and probably more germane to my argument, is that I really believe that communications PR pros should be responsible for helping to shape the strategic narrative with the CEO of a company. I think the CEO's responsibility, in my view, is the number one job should be, yes, bringing in revenue, but should be the lead storyteller for a brand. Now, it's not always possible, but in an ideal world, that would be the case. And further, I think that the CEO, he or she, should work closely with the communications team on the strategic narrative piece. And by strategic narrative, I'm really saying, like, what is the rallying cry for external audiences and for internal audiences to feel like a movement, like they're part of something bigger than the product that you sell? And I think comms is uniquely equipped to be able to tell that story with the CEO. And for that reason, they should probably be the umbrella atop things like marketing and sales and all of that stuff, because those channels are to express the intention of the strategic narrative. So that's kind of a quick way of telling you what the gist of it was, but I have a lot more thoughts and I'm happy to answer any questions.
I wouldn't be who I am if I didn't ask you what your LinkedIn inbox looked like after that. Did you have hate mail?
So not even just the inbox, but the comment section itself, some people lost their damn minds. They were just like, well, this is outrageous and crazy. And I had to like delete some of the comments because they were crazy. But most people were pretty reasonable and took it in the spirit in which it was intended. And there were other marketers that were just flat out not going to hear it, because to them, they view marketing as a discipline and they view PR as a tactic. And I think they fundamentally don't understand the profession. And that's in part the problem of PR generally. And that I think for years, we've, I think, done a pretty poor job of expressing the value we bring. And it's a hell of a lot more than just pitching a reporter.
You have a pretty unique background too. Can you catch everybody in my audience up on where you come from and how you got to what you're doing today?
Yeah, sure. So I was a journalism major, and my first, you know, couple of jobs were as a reporter. So I always value writing above everything else in PR. But then for the past 20-ish years or so, I've grown a couple of the largest privately held tech PR agencies in the country. So I was VP marketing at Shift Communications for a number of years, and then they were acquired for umpteen millions. And then I was also VP of marketing for a company called Matter Communications. Helped grow them with, you know, other people from around, I don't know, 3 or 4 million to north of 30 million. And then during the pandemic, a lot of folks did some soul searching, and myself included, about what comes next. And it was during that time I thought, you know, the industry that I helped build, literally helped build, could change some things to be even better. And that was the impetus for Crackle. So the idea was that I wouldn't spend a bunch of money on expensive real estate in Manhattan and New York and Boston, but instead have a virtual agency where we could instead spend for the quality people, no matter where they are. So, you know, you're not having to hire from a 30-mile radius around your office. You can literally hire people anywhere they are. And I think that's pretty liberating. And then just a couple other things about what's different is, like, you know, at my agency background, we used to have to track our time in 15-minute increments, like every 15 minutes, stop, track your time, stop, track your time, which is absolutely a creativity killer. So we don't track time at Crackle. We track outcomes, not outputs. And I think that is also a pretty unique and different approach to PR, especially in the age of AI, where you can track your time in 15-minute increments, but AI can help you do the work that it used to take 15 hours and you can do it in like 5 minutes. So how are you going to track that? So that's a whole nother podcast topic.
Is that common? Like a 15-minute interval tracking? Oh my gosh. I don't even know. That would just like kill my flow.
Yeah, it sure is. And that's not just in PR. It's also true in like the legal services and lawyers and all that. They're always tracking their time, which, you know, again, AI is going to disrupt a hell of a lot of that, because a lot of the research that your law clerks are doing manually can now be done instantly with AI. So again, how are you going to track the time? So really, it needs to move from an hourly model to a value-based model. You know, it's like, you're not paying me for the 15 minutes of work I did. You're paying me for the 10,000 hours it took for me to get excellent at what I do.
Amen.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about your LinkedIn content, and it makes sense with your background, is that you do fundamentally understand the relationship between journalism and PR. Can you touch a little bit on that? I know you talk about it all the time, and I think a lot of people go follow you after this, but I just love how you do that.
Yeah, I mean, so as a former reporter myself, I think it helps to have been on both sides. And, you know, as a reporter who dealt with a bunch of just garbage pitches that had nothing to do with what I wrote about or covered, I have a lot of empathy for reporters and journalists who are trying to, in some cases, file 4 to 6 stories a day. And their inboxes are just a deluge of bullshit. So when I think about every pitch that goes out from our company, I look through the lens of what the audience actually cares about, because ultimately the reporter cares about what the audience wants to know. So it's not just the reporter, although that's important. It's really who the audience of the reporter is. And I think if you have those thoughts in mind when you pitch, then 99% of your pitches will probably be on target.
And I'm sure that you've probably been able to influence and coach and teach people on your teams about how to do that. I don't know. I was one of those reporters who got a lot of that in my inbox. And I don't think that, at least back when I was doing that, there were a lot of people that understood the message that you're talking about why should the audience care?
Yeah. I think there is an art to that. I think it doesn't come naturally for a lot of the younger folks who are just starting out in PR, because really they're looking at it as almost like a pure sales engagement, where like, I need to get a hit and for my client. So they will just kind of do whatever they think they can do to entice the reporter. But it's really more sophisticated and nuanced than that. It's not about selling your story so much as it is giving something attractive for the audience. And I think that's a leap that a lot of people don't make until they're a little bit deeper in their career.
Can you elaborate on your vision of PR owning brand messaging and storytelling? How do you find that dynamic should play out within an organization that might not already be doing that?
Yeah, so again, I started with the idea on this conversation that I believe PR communication should be directly responsible in helping to craft the strategic narrative of a company with the CEO. And so, you know, when I think of strategic narrative, I think about basically what there's a guy named Andy Raskin, who was like a strategic narrative guru. And he always talks about old game, new game. And when I think of strategic narrative in through that lens, it's like, okay, if you're not doing what we are doing at this company, you're basically playing the old game and you are therefore losing. If you are using our products and services, you're playing the new game and therefore you are winning. And it's even deeper than that. Ideally, when you're crafting a strategic narrative, it is more about almost making people feel like they're joining a movement by signing up with you than just by doing a transaction. And so that requires a lot of really deep reflection and a lot of, you know, bulletproofing of a message. And I guess the bigger point is that once you finally land on that, then there are so many different ways that you need to deliver that strategic narrative across all of your key audiences, whether it's social media, whether it's platforms like Slack and Discord and LinkedIn and mainstream media, trade press, you know, broadcast. How do you translate that all? And I just think because we're natural communicators and very strong writers that we're uniquely equipped to own all of that. And then everything else should be in service of that.
Many people will argue that marketing is more data driven while PR is more about reputation and relationships. How do you address the potential conflict between these two approaches?
Yeah, so there is truth to the fact that there are a hell of a lot of measurable things and KPIs in marketing, and that's great. It's also true that there are a hell of a lot of measurable things and KPIs in PR, which a whole lot of people don't know about, and many people actually don't care about. So I'll give you like a great example. This is just like real world practical application. So I would say 9 out of 10 new clients want to know how we measure everything, whether it's share of voice, whether it's, you know, Google Analytics, like some combination of all these things. They want to know. And in many cases, we have tools that we pay for to be able to do this. But it's really interesting that when you start working with a number of these folks, the measurement piece isn't really that much of a concern to them. They don't care about the actual deep granular data. What they care about is a pretty dashboard that they can show to their board that shows the amount of hits they've gotten, how their share of voice has improved over time relative to the competition, and the most basic sort of vanilla measurement tools that you can imagine. So it's almost like the ability to deeply measure is more of a checkbox that, like, you need to be able to measure, cool. But once you actually sign on, they actually really don't care. They care about showing the board that there's progress.
What do you think are the main challenges when it comes to implementing this alternative hierarchy?
I think it is going up against the way it's always been done. I think it's really just trying to convince folks who have always done it a certain way that maybe there's an alternative that makes more sense. So I think people are pretty dug in when it comes to the structure of PR reporting to marketing. But I will say, in the post that we're talking about today, there are a number of marketers that thought there was some merit to what I was saying. And a lot of them said, well, maybe it's not that marketing should report to PR, but maybe marketing and PR are the same. And maybe they should talk to brand, which sits below the CEO. So when I told you before we got on this call, my opinion is evolving. Like, I'm kind of open to the idea of having a dedicated brand group that sits atop marketing, sales, PR, and we all sort of talk together to make sure we're all on brand. But I think comms would need to be instrumental in working with brand to nail the strategic messaging. So again, my view has evolved a little bit. I don't think it has to be one way or the other, but I do think that PR shouldn't be subordinate to marketing. I think at the very least, we should be equal. And there may be a good effective argument for marketing reporting to us.
I kind of like that idea. I haven't thought of the dynamic of brand being like the umbrella and the other branches. That's unique. Yeah. And that came from a comment then on LinkedIn?
It did. I wish I could take credit for that thought, but there were a couple of different people that said something along those lines that maybe all of that ladders up to brand, which, when you really stop and think about it, makes a heck of a lot of sense. And it's more parity across marketing and PR and less sort of hierarchical. So that could be a structure too. So I don't know that there's necessarily a right or wrong answer to that. I think that depending upon the organization, it would have to be the right fit for them. But I think it's an interesting discussion to have. And I would love to talk to different people who have structured it in both of those ways, you know, reporting up to brand, reporting up to comms, and then compare that to reporting up to marketing. I would suspect that the results over the long term are probably better if comms or brand is a top of the marketing function, because again, marketing is so volatile and the turnover is so so fast that it's really hard to have any continuity over a period of time.
I'm not going to be able to quit thinking about that. Thank you. It's going to be on my mind the entire episode now, but I do want to talk a little bit about what you think the key differences are when it comes to distinguishing between marketing strategy and storytelling and how they could complement each other in a unified narrative.
Yeah, well, again, that kind of speaks to the whole idea of having parity, because I feel that the way it's structured now, it's almost like comms is trying to fit into the marketing KPI strategy versus trying to sing from the same hymn book together. So I think the way it's structured necessarily means there's a bit of a disconnect, and that comms is trying to jump through hoops to be what marketing wants it to be versus doing what ultimately I believe the CEO and the brand needs it to be. So that's challenging. So I guess in an ideal world, there's more of a more room at the table for the head of comms to sit with the head of marketing and work in tandem toward common goals, based on, you know, experience and you know, knowledge about the space.
I just want to take a quick moment to thank the Audience Ops team for producing my show. They make it easy for me to focus on talking to fantastic people like Perry, and I would not have the show without them. If you're looking to produce a podcast for your business, I definitely recommend that you check them out. And they do produce all of my beautiful social media graphics too. If you're interested in anything like that, let me know. Okay, back to you, Perry. I want to talk now a little bit more about Crackle PR. So yeah. How does your agency currently integrate PR and marketing efforts for your clients?
Sure. So, you know, you've probably heard a lot of people talk about their PR agency as their vendor. I reject that. I don't want to be anybody's vendor. A vendor executes on what you tell them to do. A partner works with you to figure out what we're going to do together. So when you talk about integration, it really is, it's got to be a partnership. And I think here's the key. Here's the key to success for a PR and marketing group. It's that the marketing department values PR as a key business driver. Full stop. And if that's valued, then it'll be taken seriously, and they'll actually put skin in the game to make sure that PR is successful and to celebrate the wins of PR. And vice versa, PR should be celebrating marketing wins. So like, it's a little kumbaya, but that's what is successful. The longest lasting relationships we've ever had are with the internal contact, be it a VP of marketing, director of comms, CMO, who has skin in the game, believes that PR is a true business driver, and wants to work actively together to push the ball down the field and to celebrate every win as a team. And that's the whole game.
How do you ensure that PR teams can effectively measure the success of their initiatives in an integrative setup then?
Yeah, so I think every company is a little bit of a snowflake, right? So people measure different things. I think one of the biggest challenges for PR is that it's done a poor job of figuring out how to prove its ROI. Now, there have been a lot of really smart people that have gotten us a lot closer to where we need to be with things like this, for example. On the contact forms of most websites, there's usually a pull-down menu. How did you hear about us? It'll be like a sales thing, a webinar, a trade show. What it should be is an open field that just says, put in however the hell you got here. And when that's the case, you'll get things like, I read your LinkedIn post, or I heard you on a podcast, and then I saw somebody talk about you on a Slack channel, and then I saw you on a Discord thing, and blah, 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 blah. My point is that there's so much dark funnel stuff that goes into PR, and you can't measure it with a tidy little pull-down box of three things that sales is looking to hear, like webinars and trade shows and all of that, because they want to attribute it to them, right? But the reality is, you know, when people are making purchasing decisions, they typically hear about you through a bunch of different areas. And only when they're ready to actually consider it, do they show up on your site. And so, yes, to fill up the form, they'll be like, oh, a webinar. I don't know. I don't care. Just get me the information that I want. So I think that there's a lot of work that can be done on the back end of a company to make sure that you can actually attribute properly the value and the awareness that PR generates.
I've been fighting organizations to do that for a long time. Usually I come into a company and they do not have a blank form fill. And if they do, they don't make it mandatory anyway.
Yeah.
Then people just don't do it because they don't have to. I think that the majority of people are not going to leave the page. That's the argument I usually get, is that if we add that, then people are going to be fed up with the fact that we asked them and made them type in a few words and then they're going to leave. And I have not found that to be the case, but that is usually what I get back from people who don't want me to add that. It's, they're going to leave. If we give them that, if we make them do that, they're gone.
You know, what's interesting about that though, is I found that people actually feel smart when given the opportunity to say where they heard about you, because they like mentioning that it isn't in the traditional way. Like they like saying, no, it wasn't an ad. I heard about you on a cool podcast, or I was in some other cool place that somebody dropped your name. Like they want to talk about the community aspect of it to show how dialed in they are to their industry. So I kind of reject that idea that they won't take the time. I think people like doing it.
I completely agree. And I like it if it happens to be associated with my name too. Makes me feel like I'm a key player in the company if I get my own name dropped in a fill from LinkedIn. Like I do, I can't lie, I do like that.
100%. There's a guy, do you know Refine Labs, Chris Walker?
Oh yeah.
All right. So he is somebody that is making a hell of a living, and he's doing it almost all through dark funnel stuff by using these free field forms on his site. And the overwhelming evidence that comes in is that it's all people watching his podcast, seeing him on LinkedIn, like all these disparate things, which kind of fall under the PR bucket these days. And it's not, you know, a webinar or the trade show or any of that nonsense. So he's kind of proven the model out. That the dark funnel is real and it is powerful as hell. And if you're not trying to measure it, you're leaving a lot of information and attribution on the table.
I actually had him on the show a while back. But the funny thing is now when I get bad feedback from ideas like that, he's so well able to articulate that I'm just like dropping podcasts to people who don't believe me when I'm talking. Like, just watch Chris Walker. He can get it out the way that I can't. He's passionate about it. He has all the evidence. If you don't believe me, then I want you to give him 1 hour. 1 hour of him talking about anything and you will change your mind. And a lot of the times people will after that.
Yeah, dude's got game. He's a friend of mine, and he's one of the people that I point to as somebody who actually understands what the hell he's talking about.
Amen. How can an integrated approach between PR and marketing enhance the customer experience? I want to talk about how it might have a positive impact on customer perception and loyalty.
Yeah, so I think when marketing and PR are working together on the strategic narrative that I was talking about over time, you are creating ideally sort of a movement for your products and services. And that in turn engenders goodwill. So I always talk about a halo effect. I think that if you're in lockstep with marketing on the strategic narrative and you're saying the right things to the right people at the right time consistently, over time, you will get that halo effect. When someone mentions the company's name, the people you're talking to are like, I know those guys. I know Drift. I know Gong. I know HubSpot. I know, you know, you name it, Tech Darling, because there's a halo effect on the brand. You feel awesome to be associated with those companies. Like you're smarter than the rest of the people out there because you're working with them. So, you know, that's measurable in some ways, but it's also just a feeling you get. Like, you know, when people are disciples of a brand, like they are pumped about it. Like you can't talk to people who have been Apple users for, you know, 15 years and not understand how much they love that damn brand. That's a halo effect that you're trying to build. That's the holy grail.
I want to get tactical a little bit about maybe there might be a company tuning in that is thinking about doing what you talked about and trying to pull PR out of marketing and maybe have them equal or maybe even flip-flopping the way that they're reporting into now. How can they make that transition?
I think it's got to be a situation where you can't decide by committee. You know, I think that it's not a good idea just because everybody agrees it's not bad. I think there needs to be somebody that leads that decision. And, you know, all you have to really do is look at your marketing team and your PR team, which is performing, which is not over time. Are you constantly cycling through CMOs, VPs of marketing because it's just not resonating in the market? Well, that may be a good indication that perhaps the wrong person is behind the wheel. And so, you know, it's a tough decision. It's an unpopular decision, but I think it's got to be from the top. So the CEO or the C-suite has to decide that they're going to do it, and they're not going to, you know, query everybody in the company for their opinions. They're just going to make the decision and then measure over time whether it worked or not, and then do more of what works and do less of what doesn't. And you might find that the experiment fails and you revert back to the way it was. But I suspect that in most cases, if they're there's a will to make it work, there's probably a way to make it happen, and that the communications function tends to be more consistent over time than marketing, just given turnover and everything else. So from that standpoint alone, I think it makes sense in a lot of cases. Not every case, this isn't right for everyone, but for a lot of situations, I think it would be great.
Do you think it could be applicable to even if the company is giant or tiny, or does it need to be like a certain size for it to be effective?
That is a question I don't know. I would defer to my marketing peers out there to tell me whether it's tenable at the, you know, Fortune 500 size companies. To me, it seems like there's a whole lot of people that would need to be displaced and rearranged. So it might be a difficult exercise to pull off at the largest brands. On the other hand, the benefits might be worth it. You know, I think it's just an individual, like every company's a snowflake, and they have to decide whether it's right for them.
With social media being a significant channel for both PR and for marketing, how do you think that their roles intersecting in managing a company's online presence might look?
So can you ask that again? I'm sorry.
With social media being a significant channel for both PR and marketing, how do you think that their roles intersecting in managing a company's online presence might play out?
Okay. So I think increasingly social media is the lifeblood of most forward-looking organizations. I think that LinkedIn alone, if you can get rid of every other social platform and just LinkedIn as an example, is probably the most powerful business driver for a ton of brands who use the platform properly. And by properly, I mean, not by talking about, hey, we announced this awesome thing, and like, we are so fantastic, look at this award. I'm talking about more like ungating your brain and sharing every damn thing you know about your industry, the good, the bad, the ugly. And over time, you engender trust with an increasingly expanding audience that will become your evangelists, your champions, your partners, your customers over time. So I look at my own company as an example. LinkedIn is the platform I spend the most time on. We do a pretty good job with it. And I'm not out there like flogging my own stuff. I'm out there like sharing difficult truths about the industry. And as a result, I get CMOs and VPs of marketing reaching out to me, DMing me, saying like, hey man, I feel like I already know you. I'm looking for a PR agency, and I think philosophically we're pretty aligned. So by the time we have our first conversation, we're 75% of the way to closing the deal because they know my ethos. They know what I like, what I don't like, how I roll. And it makes a lot shorter work of most deals. So do you want to close business faster? Do you want to shorten sales cycles? Do you want to engender trust? Do you want to hit people at the point of need after they've been listening to you for months and months and months? Then you got to have social as a key underpinning of everything you do in a comms and marketing strategy. It's just got to be central.
I ask everybody who comes on my show to debunk an unpopular opinion, and I would love for you to give me as many as you could think of.
Yeah. So one of my favorites about PR is that to this day, we'll talk to a prospect who's been around a long time, marketer, and they ask what reporters you're friends with. They're like, who do you know at the Wall Street Journal? Who do you know at the New York Times? And so many people think that's how it works. Like, we're the mafia. Like, I can just put in a call to my man at the New York Times and get an article written about them. And it's just crazy wrong. I mean, it has no basis in reality whatsoever. So, I mean, there are thousands of people out there that think that they're paying PR agencies for our relationships, when what you really can do is just go get a service like a Cision or something and get every single contact that we have. You can buy it yourself. You can have them all. It's the story that is the thing. It's not the relationship. So that drives me goddamn crazy. And I answer the question more times than I care to admit, that people still believe it's all about who you know.
That's why it's good that you have the background that you have.
Great.
Do you have anything that you'd like to add before we let people know where they can go to find more about you?
I think I would just say that moving forward in the next 5 years or so, it's going to be increasingly important to rely on communications programs, particularly as AI begins to eat and erode traditional search, for example, branded search. So you're going to need to be able to, your audience needs to be able to find you in more ways than just Google, for example, because right now on my phone, I have two or three apps that are AI based, and I find whatever I need without looking through a single app. Whereas, you know, historically, you're like, hey, I want to find a mashed potato recipe. You go look up mashed potatoes on Google and you have to read a 14-page soliloquy about the history of potatoes, what, you know, because everybody's gaming it for SEO. AI just gives you the damn answer. So my point is that communication is going to be a hell of a lot more important. You're going to need to be found in a lot more places, a lot more often, like LinkedIn. And all social channels, because that's how you're going to be discovered. It's not going to be through search. So people need to start planning ahead for that post-SEO world, because it's not far away. So that's just kind of an interesting tidbit that I've been thinking about lately that I figured I'd share.
I love it. Okay, well, where can people go if they want to find more about you and your content? I did give you a LinkedIn shout out, so hopefully people will go there. Is there anywhere else they can go to get more of your content?
Just cracklepr.com, the website. So LinkedIn and the website. And then I'm on Twitter or X, whatever we're calling it now. And it's just at P Hedrick. And the same thing is true with Threads.
Perfect. Oh, well, I will ask you, what do you think of Threads before we leave?
So the first couple of days I was on it, it was pretty exciting because people are like, oh, finally we can escape the hellscape that is Twitter. But lately, it feels like walking around a dimly lit mall. It's just like, there's not much going on. It's pretty vanilla. It's kind of like, you know? So I think it's got to turn around somehow, and I don't know what it can do, but it's just kind of really vanilla and boring. And I go there now because I feel like I'm supposed to, but I don't go there because I want to. And I also similarly don't go to X anymore as much as I did, because that place is just difficult. So I don't know. Between X and Threads, I wish they would maybe merge and just get rid of all their shit policies and become a better platform.
I think the issue that I'm finding in Threads is maybe like searchability. Like I can't easily find content from other people that might be like me on there, and there's no hashtags or anything like that to do a little bit of a workaround. So I'm not positive what I'm doing on there either. I do feel like the mall analogy, especially where I live, is very appropriate.
I mean, malls are so boring these days, right? They're like a relic of the past, and I feel like Threads already starting to feel like a relic.
Oh, I can completely get that. Yeah, my mall now, it's just like ugly fluorescent lighting, and half the shops are closed, and the only people left are the mall walkers who get up super early in the morning to get their exercise in because it's 110 degrees out. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to, shout out to Lakeline Mall in Cedar Park, Austin area. But yeah, it's a little dismal in there. Well, on that funny note, thank you again for coming on the show today. Thank you for being willing to interact on this discussion. I did follow a lot of the responses you got when you posted that, and I loved the discussion, and I think a lot of other people did too. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Unpopular Opinion. This episode was produced by Audience Ops. If you're looking for help launching a podcast, Audience Ops handles all the legwork, so you can focus on providing the subject matter expertise. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow Ashley's show on Spotify, Apple, or YouTube.